The term boot camp can force just about anybody to take a sharp breath. Everybody, military veteran or not, understands the rough, tough, break you down to build you up process that goes on in boot camp. So today's guest chose the term deliberately. Getting to the heart of your life purpose will take time and effort. Call it Life Purpose Boot Camp. That is the name of the program and the book our guest wrote about it. Dr. Eric Maisel is a licensed family therapist, the founder of the field of creativity coaching, and a prolific author with more than 40 books under his name. He's appeared in The Exchange previously to talk about his books Brainstorm and Rethinking Depression. Hi, Eric. Welcome back.
Hi, Jeff. Great to be with you. Love to hear all that rain in the forecast.
It is nice to have, isn't it?
It is.
I have to ask first, is there a real in-person boot camp to go along with the program and the book?
There isn't. You just get the book and do the work yourself. Actually, there will be a few. I'm doing a 5-day Life Purpose Boot Camp at the Omega Institute next year. But basically, the book serves the purpose.
This is not quite creativity coaching, which you also do, and not quite family therapy, which you also do. So where was the boot camp approach born?
Starts a long time ago in me. The creativity coaching, my interest in creative performing artists, has been a long-term interest, more than 30 years. But also growing up, I grew up with the existential literature, existential philosophy. I was a reader of Sartre and Camus and all those folks. And they talked about making meaning and personal responsibility for life. But then that kind of faded out as an idea, maybe because what they were asking was a little too rigorous for most folks to actually take responsibility for your life. But that's been an interest of mine all the way through. Kind of updating existentialism has always been something of interest to me. So alongside the creativity coaching has been my interest in life purpose and meaning all these decades.
Does this get to, I mean, it seems like this is an ongoing quest for human beings as a species and certainly as individuals. I mean, I can't think about the number of New Yorker cartoons and other places, too, where you got the guru sitting on the mountaintop who's supposed to deliver the answer to what is the meaning of life to you.
Oh, yeah, it's it's a perpetual, perennial human need and desire, but we've been going at it completely the wrong way for thousands of years. I think that's the reason I wanted to do this book. There are plenty of life purpose books out there, but they're still based on the what I would call the old paradigm of there being a purpose to life, there being a meaning to life, the idea of being a seeker, that there's something to find, finding the meaning of life. I'm interested in the paradigm shift from seeking meaning to making meaning. Just as you say, there's nobody, there's nothing at the top of that mountain. There's nothing at a guru's feet. There's nothing in any particular book to find. I think we know enough about life to stop everything. That's sort of the idea of boot camp, stop everything, and identify for ourselves our life purposes. We decide them. They are choices, and then we have to live them. So even though we've been talking about this stuff for a long, long time, 2,000 years, 3,000 years, it's time to talk about it in a new way and stop the whole seeking and finding language.
Seems almost like there should be a loud duh that goes with this, but what you're saying then is that the meaning of life is going to be different for just about every single person?
And that there won't be one. It's that meaning of life phrase that I'd love to eradicate also. That's why I talk about life purposes as opposed to life purpose. The second you make the switch to the idea of life purposes rather than life purpose, then you go, okay, I get it. I need a menu of life purposes. Maybe there are lots of things that matter to me. Maybe it's creativity. Maybe it's relationships. Maybe it's activism. Maybe it's my health. Maybe it's service. We could make a nice long list of possible life purposes. That's a very different way of living your life, knowing that you have this menu of life purposes versus still looking for the purpose of life.
So your reason for getting out of bed on a given day is going to be different potentially from day to day.
It is, and even within a day, because let's say you're one of my peeps and you're trying to work on your novel. Well, maybe those 2 hours were sloggy, and even though you lived your life purpose for those 2 hours to work on that novel, you may not have gotten the experience of meaning from those 2 hours because maybe you just didn't like your book as you were writing it. Well, then you can say to yourself the following really smart thing. I'm going to live one of my other life purposes later today. I'm going to have a lovely hour with my mate, or I'm going to work on the cause that also interests me for an hour. In other words, even within the same day, if something that is one of your life purposes doesn't provoke the experience of meaning, you can turn to another of your life purposes and get that experience.
Eric, you write in the book, and it's you're very direct in your writing, which explains the book is not that fat for that reason, but this is a really interesting sentence. We have grave trouble comprehending our life purposes. Grave trouble is not overstating it, is it?
No. Maybe there was a time when folks were less constantly busy internally and externally, where maybe it was possible to stop everything and really think about your life purposes, but I'm not sure if our species has ever really had that moment. So the grave difficulty has to do with the fact that we have a perpetual to-do list, and that's reasonable that we have this perpetual to-do list of errands and responsibilities and making a dollar and all of the things we know take place in a day. And therefore, part of the challenge is identifying your life purposes. That's a kind of work, but even harder is actually getting them onto your daily to-do list, given all the other things on that to-do list.
So essentially we get in the way of ourselves because what we're doing is living life moment to moment and not thinking about what it is we really want to or should be doing?
I think that's right. I'm not sure if I'd say we get in the way of ourselves, although I think that's fair. I think life gets in the way. You know, you were at the top of the show, we were talking for a moment about, you know, rain in California and Oregon. Well, I mean, if you're a farmer, you know, in your sixth year of drought or something, it's not that you're in your own way. It's that the pressures of living, of, you know, fearing that your crops won't come up, those are real pressures on us. And I think it's hard to live our life purposes when we're under such pressure.
So we'll give you a moment to let that pressure subside. Eric Maisel from December of 2014 talking about his program Life Purpose Boot Camp. Back on the Jefferson Exchange in a minute 10. Back on the Jefferson Exchange, I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Dr. Eric Maisel is a family therapist, founder of the field of creativity coaching, and a prolific author. He's joined us several times. We go to December of 2014 for this interview about his book, Life Purpose Boot Camp, the 8-week breakthrough plan for creating a meaningful life. Boot camp is a metaphor. No military-type activities are required. And there are some calls from the original broadcast, but we can't take any new ones today. Eric, you have been through real boot camp. Any hesitation on your part about using the term for the book and for the program?
Sure. In fact, boot camp is a sort of a common metaphor now. So one fear was that it was just a cliche that so many people are using it. But the more important fear was that it signaled work, and it's not so clear that people want to do the work. So yeah, I always have that fear of naming the thing that needs to be done clearly, but nevertheless, that seems the right thing to do. So ultimately, it seemed right to call it boot camp.
So are there metaphorical equivalents? Are there exercises you'll have to do that are going to work you as hard, for example, as taking apart a gun and putting it back together in 17 seconds or whatever, or shining your combat boots to a bright shine?
I think there are, and I've named sort of the headline for the two metaphorical equivalents, and that's identifying your life purposes and then living your life purposes. Those are the two pieces of work. And there are some thinking shifts that come even before you can identify your life purposes, and that's getting clear on the relationship between meaning and life purpose. Those are abstract words that most folks don't have a particular idea what they might mean. But for me, I think there's a super large difference between those two things. I think meaning is merely one of our psychological experiences. It's one of those things we experience, like joy or rage or anything else. And that's why two people listening to this show, one person will find the same meaningful conversation, another person won't. It's that kind of subjective psychological experience. There's no objective meaning out there. Okay, so when you get that, you understand that meaning in a way isn't so important. It's just one of our experiences. It's one we can cultivate and try to influence and try to have more of, just as we might want more joy or more ecstasy or more anything. So what's life purpose compared to meaning? Meaning's just an experience, but life purposes are our choices. They're the choices we make. When you get this distinction between meaning as an experience and life purpose as a choice, you can make the following kind of sentence. Okay, I'd love more experiences of meaning, but what's most important is that I finally decide on my life purpose choices. And that's real work because it's a messy process. If you think about how many values a person wants to uphold in life, how many principles a person wants to stand behind, how many needs we have, if you take that all into account, how do you turn all of that into a life purpose statement? How do you turn all of that into something simple? Well, in fact, you can, but not without making a kind of mess first, a mess of words on the page where you get out all of your different ideas about your life purposes. Is it your health that's most important? Is it being of service? Is it creating something? Is it your family? What are your most important life purposes? Well, you have to get all of that out in order to organize and orchestrate them into a simple life purpose statement. So I think I'll put a period there in a second, but that's all by way of saying that's the kind of work that this boot camp is. And it's work, it's not dissimilar work from creative work, because creative work is also a process where you go into the unknown and you make a mess, you make mistakes, you have no guarantees that you're going to come up with an answer. This process is the same of getting to your life purposes. There's no guarantee that you'll come to an answer, an adequate answer, but it's the work that needs to be done.
Eric Maisel is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, the author of Life Purpose Boot Camp, the 8-week breakthrough plan for creating a meaningful life. So in a sense, and to carry the analogies or metaphors even further, akin to taking all of the stuff out of your footlocker and arranging it carefully, you're talking about pulling the stuff out of you, getting a look at what carries meaning for you, and organizing it better.
That's exactly right. And I have exercises for that. And, you know, in a way, it's heavy lifting, but in another way, it's what we've known all along we need to do for ourselves. We know kind of that we're not in life to be happy. Happy is wonderful. But we're in life to make ourselves proud by our efforts. That's what I think what we're after. And one of the things that will make us proud is actually doing this work of identifying and articulating our life purposes, and then, of course, getting them onto our daily to-do list. So although it's work in one sense, in another sense, it's exactly the work we've always known we needed to do.
Well, and as you point out, this takes the process from seeking to making, and it seems like there's a caution implied here not to go through the old, what was I put on this earth to do?
That's exactly right. Let me do a little sideways thing here. I have a vision of personality as being made up of three things. Original personality, that is our original endowment, our temperament, our proclivities, our strengths, weaknesses, the stuff we come into the world with. And then there's our formed personality, sort of the way we become over time, which is for most people a bit of a straitjacket. Bit of wearing handcuffs, our form personality. And then there's what I call our available personality. And that's our remaining freedom, our ability to be or become the person we intend to be. And that's the work here. It's to use our available personality, our remaining freedom, to turn ourselves into the person we now want to be. It doesn't matter who we came into life being. It matters in a certain sense. It matters profoundly if we came into life a little sadder than the next person, a little more sensitive, a little this or a little that, all of that we have to take into account. But right now, what's most important is making decisions about the future, making decisions about how we want to represent ourselves in life, how we want to live our life. It's not so much what we were meant to do, but what we intend to do.
Well, and I should point out that this is in week three, and the focus of this week is to upgrade your personality, which is you walked us into it by talking about how to get there, but that sounds like a daunting prospect for a lot of people, upgrading your personality.
It is a daunting prospect, and it's also possible. So what do I mean by upgrading your personality? Let's say you're an addict and you're looking for a fix all day long. You're not going to also be living your life purposes. I think that goes without saying. However, millions of addicts enter into recovery. From one day to the next, one day they were looking for a fix, and the next day they're working the 12 steps. And that's what I mean by upgrading your personality. Often we have to turn ourselves into the person equal to living the life purposes we believe we want to live. It's another reason for the boot camp metaphor, is this idea of being a different person from one day to the next. Whatever you were, whatever you were doing before boot camp, you had one life, and then suddenly you walk into boot camp, you have a very different life the next day. It's a dramatic change, and it's a dramatic change that's sort of easy to envision, how life has to be different from one day to the other. I think that's a blessing, that we can envision life being different just from one day to the next, because even though upgrading your personality sounds like heavy lifting, it is possible to become a different person one day to the next if that becomes one of your life purposes, if that becomes one of your intentions. For instance, I completely believe that it's possible if you're an anxious person to, and this is a metaphor, but to locate inside of you a calmness switch and flip it. And just kind of decide from one day to the next that you're going to be a calmer person. You're going to create fewer dramas in your life. You're going to have fewer histrionic friends in your life. That you're just going to do a better job of being a calmer person. And for many people, that's the kind of work they have to do. If one of your life purposes is to perform and you have severe performance anxiety, you've got to deal with that. That's one of the changes you have to make. You have to upgrade your personality in the direction of more calmness. So that's a big piece of the puzzle, is turning yourself into the person equal to your intentions.
But Eric, if you're still around a lot of the same people and you feel like in the process of upgrading your personality you're still a little wobbly, you're still on training wheels, as it were, and somebody says, hey, what's with you? You're different every day now. I mean, how do you manage to stay on course and forge ahead?
Depends who the people are. If they're merely acquaintances or even merely friends, you may have to stop seeing them. That's one of the truths of a recovery program, is you can't really still hang out with your drinking buddies and try to maintain your recovery. That's why there's a whole chapter on changing your circumstances. One of the upgrades is to upgrade your personality. Another of the upgrades is to change your circumstances. And what you just described is one of the circumstances that you may have to change. You may have to change the people you hang out with. Now, of course, this is more difficult if it's loved ones. And then you may have to have certain kinds of conversations, very clear, direct conversations, where you say, yeah, you're noticing a true thing. I want to be a different person. Please don't pester me about where that other person went. That's not the person I want to be anymore, etc. So then one of your life purposes may become speaking directly and clearly. I have a little ABC rule, speaking affirmatively, briefly, and clearly. That may become one of your new life purpose rules, so that the people around you accept the person you're becoming.
We are talking to Dr. Eric Maisel about Life Purpose Boot Camp, the 8-week breakthrough plan for creating a meaningful life, all contained in his new book. Eric is a licensed family therapist and the founder of the Field of Creativity Coaching. Here is John and Eugene. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Eric Maisel.
So I appreciate what you're saying. And for those of us who have got the time to consider these nuances, it's great. But I do some volunteer work with populations sometimes,
yep,
with people who they don't have time to get away from their buddies. And so I was just wondering, how do I get people who don't have the level of consideration or self, looking to start taking a step in a new direction?
Right, because they're very busy, it sounds like, and
that's
very
right.
Occupied. Thanks, John.
It's a great question. By the way, go Ducks. I'm a duck.
All right.
I'm also a beaver, but I'll let that go for
okay.
I'm both things. There are a lot of practical suggestions in the book. Let me just name two for not just busy people, but for people for whom this isn't an idea that they've thought about much, and so the whole idea will be new for them. One simple idea is the idea of a morning meaning check-in, 15 seconds, 30 seconds, where you say to yourself, where do I want to make some meaning investments today? And this is, of course, my language, but I think a person could translate it into his or her own language. By meaning investment, I mean, where are the parts of the day where I really want to throw myself into and make use of my human resources? Is it an hour of activism? Is it an hour of relationship? Is it an hour of service? Is it an hour of creating? So just this idea of a morning meaning check-in where you start to orient your day around your meaning needs and your life purposes rather than the perpetual to-do list, rather than errands and responsibilities, that's a small change. I think it's a big change, but it's a small thing that a person can do to spend half a minute first thing in the morning just having this kind of conversation with oneself and sort of negotiating one's day around meaning needs rather than just items on a to-do list. So that's A. B, and I want to tell a slightly long story. I don't know if the music will come up for a break.
No, you got 5 minutes. Go ahead.
Great, thank you. An elementary school teacher wrote me and said she wanted to talk to her third grade class about meaning and life purpose. But, of course, she couldn't talk to them that way. So she took them out to a dry riverbed and had them each pick out a stone large enough to write a word on, one single word. And so they came back to the classroom and they got out their art supplies, and she told the class, I would like you to pick one word that represents how you want to be this school year. And so one kid would write calm or whatever word came up for the child, and she said she'd never had a better behaved or just a better class than this class because these kids now had both an icon, the stone, and what I'd say is a mantra, a word, to help them return to the way they wanted to be, help them reorient themselves in a moment-to-moment way toward how they wanted to be. I think an adult can do this too, and in the book I talk about creating a life purpose icon. That is just a simple visual representation of how you want to be. And people have come up with all kinds of things, whether it's a lighthouse or a walking stick or an acorn or praying mantis. So let's say you do that little piece of, that's not so hard to do, to pick an image, and then maybe go have it fabricated. Go actually make a thing that you can wear around your neck, and then you have something that does as much work for you, as much personal work for you, as a cross does for a Christian or a Star of David does for a Jew. Those icons for believers do a tremendous amount of work. And there's no reason why an individual can't stop long enough to pick an image, fabricate a piece of jewelry, and now suddenly have a kind of talisman that reminds them how they want to live their life. So I completely agree with the caller that most people are living such busy lives that it's hard to do huge things. But these are two small things, namely to have a small morning meaning check-in and to pick one image that stands for how you want to live your life.
Let us take another call. We have Julie in Ashland on the line. Thank you for your patience. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Eric Maisel, the author of Life Purpose Bootcamp.
Hello. Thank you. I was wondering if you have noticed people gravitating in a direction of maybe a group purpose that maybe we all share, where we're all on the same page. I know you're asking people to take a look individually, but would that sort of siphon out maybe that there is a same page where we're more cohesively integrated as a people?
All right. Interesting concept. Thanks for that, Julie.
It is very interesting, and I agree. I think the way I would say it is that an individual might see as one of his or her life purposes, however to say it, social action or community or group work makes perfect sense to me. I'm a mental health reform advocate, and I've been interviewing folks on both sides of the pond about what's needed for mental health reform. So I've been interviewing both Americans and Brits. And for Americans, typically the interviews focus on individual work, what an individual can do to improve his or her mental health. And the Brits, interestingly enough, have much more socially oriented visions of what's needed, that the whole that more equality is needed, that more humanity is needed, that more this and that at a huge social level is needed for any individual to feel mentally well. So I completely agree that there's a social component to this. And I think, you know, we have our rugged individualism metaphor that sort of permeates everything, but there's certainly other ways to look at this.
You know, I haven't even gotten into some of the basic mechanics of the Life Purpose Bootcamp. I mean, how much time can a person expect to devote each day or week to the process?
Well, do you mean to the process or to actually living your life purposes? to the process, you know, I think if one could spend even an hour or a week on the process, that would make a huge difference. Then, of course, comes the question of how much time one should spend on one's own life purposes. And the answer can't be all the time, because we have to do other things that really don't connect to our life purposes. Getting caught in the commute two ways doesn't much support our life purposes. We understand why we're stuck there.
Eric Maisel's book is Life Purpose Bootcamp, the 8-week breakthrough plan for creating a meaningful life. He joined us on The Exchange in December of 2014. You'll hear the rest of the interview when we come back to The Exchange in a minute 20. Final segment on today's Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Dr. Eric Maisel is a family therapist who created a program to get focused on what's important in your life and where you want it to go. He wrote it up in the book Life Purpose Bootcamp, the 8-week breakthrough plan for creating a meaningful life. It's the kind of thing you can do alone, no army necessary. We took some calls the first time this aired, but no phone calls or emails today, please. We were talking about the time the process takes. You said you thought an hour a week ought to be plenty, but you also said you can't spend all your time just focusing on life purpose. And I think what you're saying here is if you spend too much time thinking about life, you're not actually living it.
There's that. And here's a poignant feature of our species, and that is that lots of the things that we hope will provoke the experience of meaning and that we know are meaningful to do don't provide that experience as we do them. By that I mean, let's say that you're an activist and this week your duties are to lick envelopes for 5 straight days. You may understand intellectually exactly why you're doing that, and you may know that this matches your life purposes and your meaning needs, but the experience of licking those envelopes may provide you with no experiences of meaning during that week. And that's sad, that the thing that we know to do isn't feeling that meaningful. That's why I love the idea of a menu of life purposes and meaning opportunities, because if you have a menu, then even after having spent a righteous day licking those envelopes, you may still have to do something else on your menu to give yourself the experience of having had a meaningful day. Maybe that's the hour you spend with your mate in the evening that sort of rounds out the day so that you actually have the experience of meaning on that day. The whole day was spent meaningfully, but maybe only that hour is experienced as meaningful.
Which is why I see creating a menu is week one, which prevents you, I think, from getting to the end of the day and saying, I have done nothing today and I've been busy the whole time.
That's right, and we only need as much meaning as we need. That's another thing that folks don't understand. They think it's sort of an either-or, either life is meaningful or life isn't meaningful. But in fact, it's quantitative. We need a certain amount of experiences of meaning. And some of them we get inadvertently. You know, we go out at night and look up at the night sky and we're filled with awe, and we have an experience of meaning, sort of inadvertent meaning like that. But many of the experiences of meaning come because we're operating on our values and principles. That's why actually the full phrase for me is making value-based meaning. It's not sort of making any old meaning. It's making meaning based on our values and principles. But we may only need 2 hours of that a day or 3 hours of that a day, and the rest of the day can be spent in what I call meaning neutral, where we don't pester ourselves about the meaningfulness of life. I don't think it's wise to pester ourselves about the meaningfulness of life when we're caught in the commute or when we're facing, I don't know, customer service complaints or... It doesn't pay to think about the meaningfulness of life at those moments when we're having zero experience of meaningfulness.
All right, so don't push it. You push yourself, I think, is what you're saying there. To not, you know, don't try to get the meaning in that moment.
That's right.
And then week two is creating a mix of meaning opportunities. And you're right of the pitfalls. And this is kind of a tough one to understand, actually. You write about giving into desires. And I'm really compressing what you wrote here, but we are built to make these mistakes, you say.
Sure. I mean, we're complicated creatures. We have to deal with the fact that not only do we want to live our values and principles, that's our highest self, let's say, but we're also flooded with desires. We want easy ways out. It's easy to make excuses about what we're doing or not doing, etc. We're complicated, shadowy creatures. And that's why we have to be, I think, awareness is probably the main word for all of the things we're talking about here. We have to be aware of our own trickiness and just aware of what actually works to support life purpose and meaning. Let me give you one simple and yet huge example of what works to support this, and that's to only think thoughts that serve us. Virtually everyone's heard about negative self-talk, and they know why they don't want negative self-talk and all of that. But what people understand less well is that just because a thought is true, it's not a reason to countenance it. We get held hostage by true thoughts all the time. For example, let's say I'm a writer and I walk into a bookstore and I inadvertently say to myself, wow, there are a lot of writers out there. Wow, there are a lot of books out there. That's a completely true thought that, however, doesn't serve us. What will happen if we don't rid ourselves of that thought instantly is that 3 days later we'll stop writing our novel because the image of all of that competition got to us. So that's another place of important awareness, is to align our thoughts and our behaviors with our intentions and to only try to think thoughts that serve us.
All right, so it's a fair amount of mental discipline here, certainly.
It isn't. The Buddha said, get a grip on your mind. I think I'm saying the same thing. I think lots of folks, East and West, are saying the same thing. We don't have to be held hostage by our thoughts. Just because a thought comes to us, it doesn't mean we have to countenance it. And I think folks don't exactly understand that, and they don't have tactics for dealing with it. The simplest tactic is the three-step process that all cognitive therapists teach, and that is hearing what you're saying to yourself, disputing those utterances that don't serve you, and then substituting more affirmative language. It's easy to say, and it's actually easy to do also if a person will take the time to do it.
Eric Maisel, again, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, the author of Life Purpose Bootcamp, the 8-week breakthrough plan for creating a meaningful life. Is one of the reasons for the boot camp being 8 weeks because it gives you a chance to really think about it? So, for example, one of the things it seems like is that what you decide is a value that is important to you today. You could feel very differently about tomorrow or next week.
Absolutely. We're always sort of behind ourselves, and we have to check in with ourselves regularly to see if we're still standing for the same things. I'll give you a simple example. Let's say that one of your life purposes is your health, but then one of your children comes to you and says they need an organ transplant. Well, you're going to forego your health for the sake of saving your child's life. Suddenly, health recedes as a top value. It's still a value, obviously, but you've changed your mind about what comes before what. Another simple example is, sometimes we're completely for the war our country is fighting because we think it's righteous, and then we learn some new information, and suddenly we're against the war our country is fighting. And those are earthquakes. Those are meaning crises. We had a vision of meaningful life, one piece of which was being for this war, and now it's shifted. And this kind of shifting goes on all the time. Meaning and life purpose are circumstantial. They're embedded in reality. And as reality changes, our life purposes change. That's another reason to not get hooked on that idea of the purpose of life, because our life purposes really do change according to our changed circumstances and our changed visions of life.
Eric, you do include case studies in the book, and one of the first is about a woman in midlife, and I wonder if that is the most common time for the boot camp. And this is really about giving some structure to a process that tends to happen in midlife anyway.
I think that there are two paradigmatic times. I think midlife is one, and then I think retirement is another. A lot of folks of a certain age are writing me and coming to the workshops and coming to the book signings and what have you, facing retirement and perhaps never did figure out their life purposes, but now see this both as an opportunity to work on life purposes, but also as a sort of a dreadful possibility that they still won't figure out their life purposes, and now they have all of this time to be pestered by meaninglessness. So I think that retirement age is an important time, and I agree that midlife is another important time. Jung had the idea. Jung created the phrase midlife crisis, and he had a really interesting idea. Most developmental models, like the Freudian model, claim that we develop. We start somewhere and then we develop. Jung had a different idea. He believed that we started out whole, that we came out of the womb just perfectly wonderful, that we were everything we needed to be at 2 and 3 and 4 and 5, and then we undeveloped. Then life got to us and we started to get smaller and smaller, and that the midlife crisis was an expression of our realization that we'd gotten way smaller than we wanted to be. And it makes a lot of sense to me. I think I'm a Jungian in that sense. I think we do start out whole, and then at midlife crisis time, we suddenly or slowly over time realize how constrained, how constricted a life we're living.
A reassertion of wholeness, in a sense.
That's right. That's right. We want those opportunities. If you think one of the tasks of determining your life purposes is to think back to when you were 5, 6, 7, 8, and to realize what you loved back then, because those are often kind of our truest meaning opportunities. We're sitting in a corner reading a book when we were 5, or in a darkened movie theater, or looking at things through our microscope. Whatever it was that we experienced as really sort of joyful and awesome and meaningful back then probably are still our meaning opportunities now, but life tends to have rubbed them away over time, and midlife is an opportunity to return to some of those.
Do you find that there are some people who come to you seeking assistance because they've been carrying around values or views of life purpose and meaning that they've stuck to so white knuckled like that they really just needed to let go and allow themselves to consider other things that give them meaning in life?
Absolutely. One of the reasons that the first year of college, actually the last year of high school and the first year of college, are so tumultuous for young folks, in addition to leaving home and being in a dorm and all of those things, but for a creative person, for a smart, sensitive person who all through elementary school, middle school, high school thought that maybe she was going to have a creative career, be a painter or a writer or this or that, well, then she has that conversation when she's 17, her folks maybe have been putting up her little drawings on the refrigerator all those years, and now they say, please don't really be a painter. Please do something sensible. It's been wonderful. You're creative. Going to your plays has been a wonderful experience for us. Now stop it.
But what are you really going to do with your life?
What are you really going to do? And kids don't really expect that conversation. They don't expect the rug to be pulled out from under them that way. And so they go into college, and then they have to do that horrible thing. They have to choose a major. And many creative folks choose a sensible major. So they choose whatever, engineering, we'll just pick one, or law. And then they live the life of an engineer or a lawyer for the next 30 years, and then they come to me desperate because that was not really their life purpose choice. We understand what kind of choice that was. It was a sensible choice. Didn't really work at the heart level, didn't really work at the head level, and now they somehow want to come back around to being the creative person they lost becoming. So it's absolutely the case that folks often, not just believe, that folks have the experience of not having lived their life the way they had hoped to live it, and now they want a second chance at it.
So I imagine you meet some people who get to 40 and 50 and think, you know, I really should have been playing the piano this whole time. And do they get back to it?
With great difficulty, because then one of the questions becomes, am I to be a hobbyist at this? Can I really do something wonderful in this field now? can I throw over my engineering practice and quit my day job and start writing scripts? It's tremendously difficult, and that's why when we talk about life purpose choices and negotiating each day, one of the kinds of negotiations that a person has to make is living a current life, not throwing over the paycheck and responsibilities and what have you, while at the same time building the next life.
I noticed that the week six is about creating a life purpose statement. Is this like a mission statement for an organization?
It's very similar because, as I said earlier, the process of getting your life purposes out can be messy. There may be many, many things that sort of want to go into your life purposes. But then in order to be able to hold such a thing close, we have to organize all of those things into something as simple as a life purpose statement. And again, just as with life purpose icons, which folks come upon very quickly, people can come up on their life purpose statement really pretty easily.
All right, a lot to consider here. It takes 8 weeks, but as Eric said, about an hour a week. Life Purpose Boot Camp, the 8-week breakthrough plan for creating a meaningful life. Eric Maisel is a licensed family therapist and the founder of the field of creativity coaching. Eric, always enjoy our discussions on The Exchange.
Thanks for having me.